For the second time in a decade, the Supreme Court of the United States will scrutinize the use of race in admissions policies at Michigan's public universities. Today, the justices hear the oral arguments in Schutte versus Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action. The case focuses on Proposal 2, which was a voter-supported initiative from 2006 that bans the use of race in, among other things, admissions decisions at public universities here in Michigan. It's considered one of the most important cases the Supreme Court is hearing this fall, and its decision could have wide-reaching effects. Here to help us sort through the nuances of the case, Phil Pacillo, who's an MSU law professor and a Supreme Court watcher. Welcome back to Current State, Phil.
Good to be here, Mark. Thanks.
This is a pretty complex case, as a lot of our listeners have probably heard this morning on NPR. Prop 2 dates from 2006, but it's gone through the legal system and it's been reversed since then. Break this down for us as best you can. What's at the heart of this dispute?
Yeah. Well, on one hand, you have the position taken by the Attorney General, which is that all Proposition 2 is trying to do is take race off the table in the admissions context. Uh-huh. So we don't want race to favor anyone, but at the same time, we don't want race to disadvantage anyone. We just want a completely race-neutral admissions process. And the Attorney General's position is that's about as consistent with equal protection as you can get. Because the whole point of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, which is the clause at issue here, was to prohibit government from discriminating on the basis of race. And so all the Attorney General is saying is that's exactly what this amendment to the Michigan Constitution does. On the other hand, the position taken by the challengers to the validity of Proposal 2, and I'm calling it Proposal 2, but it's really Article 1, Section 26 of the Constitution of Michigan, so after Proposal 2 was enacted. But the provision in question was the basis of the challenge is that what it has done is taken from those who should be making this decision, which is the trustees or governors or members of the boards of the various public universities.
Board of Regents at U of M, Board of Trustees at MSU, yeah.
Right. So the decision reposes with them. And what has happened is that you've taken a decision that should be one made by the trustees, the governors, the regents, and now made it so that those who support these policies, that is, policies that give some sort of preference to certain specified racial and ethnic groups. Now, for those groups to get such policies back in the state of Michigan, they've got to essentially work to overturn the provision.
The Constitution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So only by constitutional amendment can they have and benefit from the formerly existing affirmative action policies at Michigan's public universities.
There are a couple of other things at issue. One of them is whether proposition or proposal two violates the Equal Protection Clause in
Yes.
the 14th Amendment. How is that relevant?
Yeah, so the idea is that it's unconstitutional for a state to violate the equal protection of the laws. And by taking this decision away from the those who would ordinarily make it, and transferring it to the Constitution of Michigan, what's happened is that a policy that racial and ethnic minorities would primarily benefit from, mm-hmm. as opposed to the majority of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a policy here that has unique benefits for racial and ethnic minorities, and you've changed the political structure. The Supreme Court of the United States in prior cases has used the term the political restructuring doctrine. So the restructuring here, the argument goes, is that you've made it so that for someone who would benefit from a race-conscious admissions policy, say at the University of Michigan or Wayne State University, you've made it so that that person can no longer lobby the university president, the university board, can't support someone who's running for office for trustee or governor or regent who would support these policies. The only thing that they can do now is amend or seek an amendment to the Constitution, mm-hmm. and therefore you've made it so that racial and ethnic minorities in Michigan are facing a unique obstacle that, say, supporters of a different sort of preference, such as a preference given to legacy applicants who mm-hmm. have parents who are alumni of the University of Michigan or another public university, those folks don't have to worry about getting the Constitution amended because they can simply lobby the boards, the president, the faculty, administrators. You know, it's changed the playing field, disproportionately disadvantaging racial and ethnic minorities.
Mm-hmm. What are the relevant precedents in this case? I know that there are at least two.
Yes, the most supportive one for the challengers is a case out of Seattle from a few decades ago.
Let's be clear. Sure. Attorney General Schuette is a challenger, correct? He is trying to overturn the ruling of the Sixth Appeals Court.
He'd be the petitioner in this case,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But he's defending against the challenge to the validity of Proposal 2.
Right.
So the case that that he has to be the most concerned about is a case out of Seattle from a few decades ago. So what happened was that the Seattle School Board had initiated a race-conscious integration plan through busing, which at that time was something that was often used by school boards to respond to the fact that you had so many school districts that were predominantly white, and let's take affirmative efforts to integrate those districts by relocating African-American students who live in different neighborhoods,
sure.
And let's get them in the white schools. And so the response was to have a statewide initiative, kind of like you have with Proposal 2, that would prohibit that sort of thing, which required that if you live in a certain neighborhood, you go to a neighborhood school, which would make it unlawful for a school district to prohibit or to effectuate a busing scheme that would take someone out of their neighborhood. And the court said that's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause. And the reason is that you've taken the decision away from the local school board with respect to a policy that primarily benefits racial and ethnic minorities.
Interesting.
So the argument would be that even though the benefits of integration are universal, right? The fact that white students are now going to school with African-American students, there are mutual advantages there, but primarily the benefit is for African-American students who are now given a new opportunity to attend a different school system. And so the argument here would be that the formerly existing race-conscious admissions policies employed by the University of Michigan and other public universities here primarily benefit racial and ethnic minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And you've now changed the structure so that the lower-level body, so in the Seattle case, it would be the school board that would decide we need to integrate our school systems. But here it would be the Board of Trustees or the Board of Regents, which is saying we need to promote the enrollment of specified racial and ethnic minority groups who are underrepresented, we need to do more.
So that policy is set more locally as opposed to in a state constitution,
right? Which basically removes the issue from any effective effort to enact change.
So it sounds like the Attorney General Bill Schuette needs to overcome the Seattle ruling.
I think that's right.
Is it clear how he's going to try to do that?
Well, I think the emphasis will be placed on the fact that all Proposal 2 seeks to do is remove race from consideration entirely. And I think that argument will receive a lot of merit from the more conservative-leaning justices.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there's no possible way in this case, in my view, that Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, Chief Justice Roberts, I don't think it's plausible they're going to find that there's an equal protection violation when all the state is seeking to do is remove race from consideration entirely.
Mm.
So remember that they don't support affirmative action programs to begin with. They wouldn't find the sorts of programs that Michigan had in place before Proposal 2 to even be constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So you already have, I think you have four justices who are ready to adopt the attorney general's position. And if need be, they would overrule the Seattle precedent and any other prior precedent in order to reach that decision. They would simply say it's not consistent with our other equal protection approaches to say that removal of race from government consideration or public university consideration is a matter of the state constitution.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Phil Pacillo, Supreme Court watcher from the MSU School of Law, about today's arguments in Schuette versus Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action at the U.S. Supreme Court. Another interesting wrinkle here is that Justice Elena Kagan has recused herself from this case,
yes,
which could present an interesting scenario. Do you have a 4-4, a potential for a 4-4 situation here?
There is that potential. So the effect of a 4-4, basically a tie, mm-hmm, would be that the court can't reach a decision. There would have to be a majority of the court to either reverse what the lower court has done or affirm what the lower court was done. So the effect of a tie is the same effect as if the court didn't take the case to begin with. And that means the Court of Appeals decision would stand, and that means Proposal 2 remains invalid,
right,
in the state of Michigan. So that's a really interesting consequence. I would – so and if that came to pass, then it's simply a matter of someone else bringing a challenge in a different case, either to Michigan's Proposal 2 – to Proposal 2 would remain invalid. But in a different state, there are about a half dozen states that have – provisions like Proposal 2.
Mm-hmm.
So a challenger would initiate suit to invalidate one of those provisions, and then the case could very well return back to the court, in which case Justice Kagan would be able to participate. I mean, I imagine the justices rarely offer explanation for why they recuse, but here...
So
I
we don't know why she's recused herself.
Yeah, I think we can assume that she's recusing because she was involved in some way in challenging the validity of the proposal or defending the validity. So she was when she was Solicitor General.
Okay.
Yeah, so in her prior capacity as Solicitor General. So she wouldn't have that issue in a subsequent case because she wouldn't be Solicitor General and she wouldn't be involved at all. So you would get five justices in the majority or to either invalidate or validate the provision. But my feeling is Justice Kennedy, when it comes to matters of racial discrimination, has been pretty stringent. And when you and I were talking about the Fisher case decided last June, we focused on Justice Kennedy and how he's rather skeptical about the circumstances under which race-conscious admissions policies can be valid. And he would be a big supporter of race-neutral alternatives being appropriate to achieve the objectives of diversity.
How about that?
So, yeah. So my feeling is he'd be more inclined to validate Proposal 2 than to invalidate it, in which case you have a 5-justice majority, in which case Proposal 2 is valid again.
Is this more relevant to those handful of states like Michigan, California, Arizona, I believe, is another
Correct.
One? Is this just an awful lot more relevant to those, or is there an impact? Is there a wider impact nationally?
Yeah, immediately the impact will be on those states that have these provisions. It might be that you have some states waiting in the wings to adopt these kinds of provisions by referendum or otherwise. So, for example, you might have a state that's just waiting and seeing what is the U.S. Supreme Court going to do. Right.
Okay.
Let's see how this plays out. And if the Supreme Court says it's valid, we'll go forward and do one of our own. But I imagine most states that wanted to do that would have done it already.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have a handful that will go forward with new proposals.
This is very. You expect it to come back before the Supreme Court? Do you expect this to return from some state, from some jurisdiction?
Yeah, only if the court doesn't resolve this case by way of a in light of a tie.
Okay.
In light of a tie vote.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phil Pacillo is an MSU law professor and a Supreme Court watcher. This has been very constructive. Thank you, Phil,
Thank
for joining
you, Mark.
Us.